Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Gift of Gaming podcast. And on this week's episode, we're talking all the news from November. That's right. Sony thinks that their live service games are failing. GTA 6 and Rockstar aren't being great to their employees. And of course, AI's back in the headlines. It's all here on this week's episode of the Gift of Gaming podcast. All right, it's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the console-hating, PC-playing, retro-repping, lore-seeking, full-time Canadian himself, Chris Robbins. Chris, say hello to the people.
Hello, people.
And, of course, the artist who may never, ever be known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself, Luke Maycock. Luke.
What it is. What's up?
What are you, homie? What a time.
Before we go into, we're having a good conversation before I hit the record button, which I want to return to. So I'll get into that before we talk about what games we're playing. We were discussing Call of Duty and its abject failure.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen the videos? Like the campaign, it looks batshit crazy.
Well, I
that apparently was, like zombies are part of like the actual main story now, and they're just like.
But it's a weird because I don't know if it was Summer Games Fest or if it was a PlayStation Direct or whatever their PlayStation. What are the PlayStation ones called? State of Play.
State of Play. Yeah.
So I don't know if it was a State of Play or something like that.
The PlayStation.
I know. It's definitely on me. But they aired it, and at the end was the kind of release trailer for Black Ops. And when I was watching it for a while, I thought it was a Control game. I thought it was like a new thing from Control.
Yeah.
So did I.
It had that the dude from Heroes, and he was in the office.
Yeah.
The butterfly or something.
It was really weird, and I was like, this isn't where I ever won Call of Duty. Like, not that I play Call of Duty much anymore anyway, because of like I'm a big Warzone. Like, Warzone was the last time. The Battle Royale was what I got into. I don't want to play your weird ass, crazy. I don't even know what I'd call that. Like, psychic thriller version of Call of Duty?
I liked it conceptually. I liked the idea. I was like, oh, they're trying something new. I love SCP stuff. I love Control. This could be sick. I haven't watched anything about it since, and I've just heard bad things.
Call of Duty, they're known for like modern warfare. They're known for just like, it's supposed to be, I'm not going to say a sim, but a bit more grounded than your fucking Halos.
Yeah. And Battlefield
like
6
that.
Came in with their big launch trailer.
Battlefield
with
is the grounded one now.
Because they came on with and I think their trailer had like Zac Efron and like three other celebrities on
it. And they killed him immediately.
And they destroyed them. And they were like, we don't do blah blah skins or whatever. And I was like, they're right. Like, you know, that Call of Duty got way. Call of Duty was trying to do the Fortnite thing. And I'm like, you're not Fortnite. You're not. Stay away from that. But yeah, as you said, Chris, the AI side of things is has really messed up that game for them. Because they pumped a lot of AI into
that
game, right?
And, oh, God. I'm just going to riff right now, so please.
Tell us if we're wrong on the Gift of Gaming podcast at gmail.com.
Definitely going to fuck some of this up, but I've heard or read things that, like, because of the involvement, and they didn't disclose they were using AI in the game to the amount that they have, that apparently, like, it led to a lot of refunds, like, based on the fact that just, like, I don't buy AI games, then they never told me there was AI. Mm-hmm. And there's clearly, like, AI-generated, like, images, like, the battle tags or whatever. But apparently, now there's a push in, like, U.S. politics or, like, Congress or something to, like, move forward and faster with regulation of AI, which I've been saying needs to happen since, like, AI started becoming, like, the moment, like, ChatGPT or just, like, you know, the image theft.
It's just moving too fast to regulate, really, like,
exactly.
Which is the, yeah, and we're
and we
very much reactive.
Moving fast enough with our laws and regulations, but apparently this game is pushing that forward, which I might be misquoting, or maybe somebody just gave me, like, a, you know, just a hopium article, but, yeah, it'd be wild to see if it's a video game that was the driving force behind, like, actual regulation of this.
Call of Duty's got such a kind of a hold on the, what would you say, the pulse of gaming, though, right? Call of Duty's just been around for so long.
It's supposed to, but it used to.
It just seems irrelevant now, especially with like the stacked lineup. Like, this year's Game Awards clearly shows that AAA just, we don't care anymore. I think we've finally realized that.
Well, we don't
they've been
pay,
fucking us for
yeah,
years.
We don't want to pay 70, 80 quid for a game that you put such
acid
little
flips.
Effort.
Yeah, I mean, we've been complaining about acid flips for ages, and we like people complain all the time when they're like the cheapy little games, but now they're the $80 games that they're literally just asset flips.
So we don't want that. But that was just, I enjoyed that, what we were getting into. And this is podcast worthy stuff. But Luke, what have you been playing games at all at the minute?
I've been playing Hades 2.
Oh yeah, you absolutely bossed Hades 2. I
was enjoying it. Yeah.
I am not as good at Hades as you are.
Why? Well, I played a lot of Hades.
We had the exact same night when we.
Yeah, well, you and me finished on the exact same night. Yeah, just about the stats, Chris. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I played a lot of Hades 1. And I did all the Pact of Punishment stuff all the way to the end. So by the time I started playing Hades 2, the style of game I was used to playing was insanely difficult. And I kind of had, my gut reaction was oh, Hades 2 is a baby's game.
I mean, I did. Mm. Are you talking about heat? Cranking up your heat in here?
Yeah,
Hades
yeah.
One? Yeah, yeah. I think the highest heat I did was maybe 12, 14. It wasn't a lot. It was halfway.
I don't remember what I did, but I always had the maximum, the epic level bosses turned on, and then I just push it as hard as I could because I was just
Yeah, the epic level bosses was definitely the best one for pushing high heat.
It was great. So when I got into Hades 2, I do, but I also do feel the base game of that without anything turned on is easier than Hades 1. I do think that.
I think it might be a hot take. I just think across the board, it's just not as good as Hades 1.
Maybe not.
Everything about it, I think, is not as good as Hades 1.
I don't know about that.
I never finished Hades 1. I never even got, I suppose, close to, the how many times did you have to finish it to get one of the true endings, whatever it was. I never did that. But playing Hades 2, it hooked me in a way that Hades 1 never did. And I think maybe that's down to timing. I think it was the kind of game that I was looking for at the time with Hades 2.
Yeah,
and I got right into that and played the absolute shit out of it. And it's one of those games that I still love. Just dropping into every now and then.
Yeah.
Do I think it's better than Hades 1? I think story-wise, I think the narrative for Hades 1, and this is what me and Craig did the
Games Club
on it, and we both kind of said that the narrative wasn't as good as Hades 1. The Hades 1 narrative really had a whole, this is, it's a roguelike because of this,
He was just a kid, just looking to rebel. It wasn't that serious.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's the other problem I have with Hades 2 is they went a bit too heavy into the narrative. There's a bit too much dialogue and interact.
There's not a dialogue, myself, but the dialogue
I didn't do this in Hades 1, but I'm skipping a lot of dialogue because I just don't care about a lot of the characters. Where in Hades 1, there's such few characters, and I did care about all of them.
And a lot of the Hades 2 dialogue isn't, not to say it isn't meaningful. I love listening to it. A lot of it isn't doesn't equate to anything important whatsoever. There's a lot of the stuff that you go through Hades 2 and you could skip it and it wouldn't mean a whole lot. The story stuff that you get kind of dribbles in throughout the game comes a lot towards when you're doing the kind of late runs to defeat the monster of monsters. I always forget his name.
Typhon.
Yeah, thank you. But that's when you kind of get a lot of the hero, the gods coming down and explaining kind of things as to why, what happened and why it happened. And that's the kind of shit that I wanted. And I felt Hades 1 had a lot more of that throughout the game. Whereas Hades 2, I felt like there was a big middle part that I was like, oh, but in saying that, I enjoyed Hades 2 more than Hades 1 in terms of gameplay.
I did not care about Odysseus's opinions of dying to the sirens. It's just nothing to me. I don't care about your opinions on the sirens.
Favorite boss, Luke?
Favorite boss?
We keep standard. We keep kind of underworld and overworld bosses without going into the bonus. I know you can...
I'm probably going to say Prometheus because I found it the hardest boss. So it's the most entertaining.
Prometheus has been fucking my shit up.
Ben Starr?
Is it?
Yep.
I thought Prometheus...
What isn't?
Was... the final boss of the top world.
Yeah.
After beating him and finding out there's more, I was just like, shit.
It's terrifying when you go to that next stage after having squeaked out that fight and everything's really fucked up and scary and there's really strong.
The first time I managed to beat Prometheus and it took me a fair few goes. Again, Chris, I thought it was the end of the game. I was like, great, cool, let's hear it. And then I went through all these back and I was wrecked. I was my health's low. I got nothing left to give, so I was running on fumes. But no, I haven't beaten Typhon, but I do nip into the game every now and again.
I haven't beaten Typhon yet either.
I really enjoyed Hades 2. I enjoyed it more than I played Hades 1. I think the narrative for Hades 1 is better, but Hades 2 is just so clean. It's insanely clean.
The other thing about Hades 1, though, is the weapons across the board. There's not one that... Obviously, I have my preferences, but There's not one that is just like, fuck, I don't want to do... Because you know how you get the bonuses with the weapons?
Yeah.
There's not a single one that was just like, ah, shit, I don't really want to do this. Whereas Hades 2, like half of them, I'm just like, I don't want to fucking play with that
weapon. I was actually the opposite. I half the weapons in Hades 1 I never touched, I don't really care for. And then in Hades 2, I love all of them. Like,
That seems crazy to me. You love them all?
I love them all, and there's like aspects to some of them that are just like so interesting. Like there's
I mean, that was Hades 1 too. Like the aspects changed the gameplay.
Changed entirely. The gameplay completely. Like the aspect of, is it the aspect of Medea?
Yeah. With that you hold the...
You hold onto them, and then if you charge through them, it releases them. And then they...
Did you know that like the world record right now is under 4 minutes?
And it's done with that aspect of Medea. Yeah, I've
Jesus
heard,
Christ!
Yeah,
to finish what, like just the top world, bottom world,
the whole game.
What?
Yeah. Beat the game in entire run, 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Fucking hell!
But it's 4 minutes in game time. So
the timer
pauses during like after an encounter is beat.
It's like when you're doing the Trials of Chaos, you sometimes get a timer, but the timer will pause after the encounter.
Right, okay. So the moment you complete things and you're making a decision to go through the doors, timer's off.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's fair.
They might as well not be, because these speedrunners...
They're just fucking running through.
Like, I don't even know how they're reading it that fast. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Anyway, that's me. Hades 2. Nice. Loving it. Such a great game. That's been
Chris,
my whole life.
Chris, what are you?
I've been playing a bit of Hades. I'm kind of going through like a dry spell right now, man. I'm just not enjoying games as much as I should be. I'm bored. I guess. I don't know.
Fair. Arc Raiders has done it dusted for you.
I did pick up the Diablo 2 Resurrected. I was playing with my buddy Dave. We used to play Diablo 2 like when it first came out all the time. So I picked that up and then played a bit of Arc Raiders. Yeah, but other than that, I started a Baldur's Gate 3 run again, but that's probably not going to go anywhere.
Dark Urge,
yeah. Nice. I'm killing everything, man. I'm kind of being shitty about it. Because I don't want to miss any Dark Urge options. Mm. So I got a YouTube video just making sure, or like a guide or something, making sure like I pick
you hit
all
the points.
Dark. Yeah.
You know, that's the... Someone had to explain this to me recently. That's the like true story of Baldur's Gate is Dark Urge.
Fuck
no,
off, really?
Fuck.
Dark Urge is the storyline of Baldur's Gate. You're like from Baldur's Gate 1, like you're one of the sons of... You're an offspring of like one of the gods and you're the Dark Urge. And that's the... gameplay. You're one of the children of Baal, basically. And
I like that.
Someone explained that to me recently. I was like, what? But that's like New Game Plus stuff. And they're like, no, that's just like, it was just Dark Urge for the longest time. And then after a while, the developers were like, well, I guess if people want to create their own characters as well, they can. And we could just have roughly the same thing happen to those characters.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
It's sick.
I like that because I guess it's not a thing that would sell for everybody.
No.
You know, as a game thing. So I get that. I myself, gentlemen, are...
Sorry.
No, go for
one more thing about Dark Urge. The best part of it is it's the only way to like truly kill and make sure he's never on your team. Fuck Gale. I hate that guy. He's not eating any of my magic items because I killed him, chopped his arm off in the portal. Yeah, he's gone. He's never coming. He's never joining. Fuck that guy.
You hate him. I'd love to hear more about why you hate Gale, but I think we have...
Because he eats my items, man. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, you know, I suppose he's a bit of a liability, really, I guess, with the whole thing.
I don't think he eats that many items. I don't think...
One is too many.
Well, one of my special magical items. Yeah, yeah.
I want that to sit in my barrel where collecting dust.
That I'll forget ever existed.
Yeah.
Gale goes over to the barrel and Chris just puts his hand down. No.
You can't touch this. On a lighter note, I'm playing a fuck ton of Animal Crossing at the minute. I'm back in there.
I walked in, I saw a video up.
Yeah, it was on standby at the minute, but I was playing it. The turnip exchange is back hopping.
Is it actually?
Yeah. Because it was quiet when I started playing this maybe about 3 weeks-ish ago. And the turnip exchange was really quiet. And I was worried. I was like, shit. I was kind of hoping after the announcement of all the DLC, everyone would be back. But I think now that we're entering December and the DLC is out in January, I think the Animal Crossing players are like, oh, I need to tidy up my island for that new the new DLC. So I think people are getting back into it. But this week I was fucking, man, I was buying turnips for 67 bells and selling them for 600 and something bells. I'm a wealthy man. I got millions of bells in the pocket, which is great because my island is still so new that I need a lot of bells to, you know, design it and stuff. So I'm there.
Good
I'm there.
You.
Yeah, it's been great.
What's the story with that DLC? It's announced, but it's not out yet.
Announced, but it's coming out January, I think 26th maybe, but it's there's a new hotel. Either I think it's maybe on your island or you get a boat from your thing to the island where the hotel is, and you pretty much are running the hotel for visitors as an aside to your island. On top of that, they're improving, like there'll be a Switch 2 version of Animal Crossing, you know, like that look. Basic improvements, run faster, frame rate's better, which is not what I need from an Animal Crossing game. But I think they're like, they're improving inventory and all that kind of stuff, adding in a few bits and pieces. But it's great. It's one of the things I'm disappointed by was that by them announcing, because it was fucking radio silence since 2023 on it, like there was nothing for Animal Crossing. And I kind of was thinking, oh, you know, maybe they'll be talking about a new one for Switch 2 at some point soon. But the fact they're releasing this DLC means we are so far away from a fucking new Animal Crossing game. But it's fine. I still have a lot to get out of this one, I think, you know.
That's great.
Well, let's kick it to this week's episode. We're on the news, and I guess let's get started with a naughty rock star, shall we? This is coming from gamesindustry.biz by Sophie McAvoy. This is from kind of the 3rd of November, but it's been updated a couple of times since with how this article's been going. So I shall read the original story from November 3rd and go through the update. The Independent Workers Union of Great Britain, the IWGB, has accused Rockstar of union busting after the studio reportedly dismissed 30 to 40 employees last Thursday, October 30th. As Bloomberg reports, the workers affected were either members of the union or attempting to organize at Rockstar. Rockstar has just carried out the most blatant and ruthless act of union busting in the history of the games industry, said IWGB President Alex Marshall in a post on the union's website. The quote continues, "This flagrant contempt for the law and for the lives of the workers who bring in their billions is an insult to their fans and the global industry," end quote. Marsh did continue on to say, despite this calculated attack on workers organizing for a collective voice and to improve their difficult working conditions, the Rockstar Union remains undeterred. They will keep organizing for respect and better conditions whilst continuing to pour their blood, sweat and creativity into games that are loved by millions. Developer's parent company, Take-Two, refuted the IWGB's claim, stating that the terminations were, quote, "for gross misconduct and no other reason," and that it fully supports Rockstar's ambitions and approach.
Starting a union is the gross misconduct.
Yeah. Quote, "We strive to make the world's best entertainment properties by giving our best-in-class creative teams positive work environments and ongoing career opportunities," said Take-Two head of global corporate communications, Alan Lewis. "Our culture is focused on teamwork, excellence, and kindness. Rockstar Games terminated a small number of individuals for gross misconduct and for no other reason. As always, we fully support Rockstar's ambitions and approach." Then this was updated on November 6th. Rockstar has claimed workers fired last week were leaking confidential information and their dismissals were not related to the union activities. Quote, "We took action against a small number of individuals who were found to be distributing and discussing confidential information in a public forum, a violation of our company policies," a spokesperson told Bloomberg. Quote, "This was in no way related to people's right to join a union or engage in union activities," end quote. In response, Independent Workers Union of Great Britain, the IWGB, President Alex Marshall said, "Rockstar is afraid of hardworking staff privately discussing exercising their rights for a fairer workplace and collective voice. Management are showing they don't care about delays to Grand Theft Auto 6 and that they're prioritizing union busting by targeting the very people who make the game." This is a sad one because this is kind of, I think, a big deal in terms of this is what Rockstar's stuff has happened at the beginning of November, and I think it's kind of already off the radar.
Do you think it's already off? People have stopped talking about it? Or
I think so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's been on my mind because you and me discussed Red Dead Redemption, and I think it was sure. The first time you and me ever got into big conversations, Luke, on what do you call it? Towards the end of a game production, the
burnout,
the grind.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Whatever you call it. And we were saying that Rockstar, when you looked at companies, Rockstar was the worst for this kind of grind that it forces its employees through.
I mean, well, yeah. So that's the key word, forcing. But like a lot of these games, like, have you heard the, speaking of Hades again, like, they did a pretty fucking hefty grind near the tail end of, like, trying to release their game. But it wasn't so much forced. There was a small team. They were passionate about doing it. And, like,
yeah,
fair play to them. Like, they made one of the greatest games ever fucking created. So, like, there is a bit of a grind with this industry that, like, you kind of have to accept. But it is when you a big, greedy company that's forcing you. And especially, like, if you fucking tell all these employees that they have to work overtime while you're sitting on a, like a yacht or something somewhere, then something's fucked up.
But do we have to expect these grinds?
That's the question.
I mean, life has, you know, speed bumps and shit every now and then.
But it's like, again, like, it's a topic that I have a lot of experience with because, like, I've worked in a few animation studios and I've done a lot of unpaid overtime. I've done so much unpaid overtime.
See, no, that's a problem, though. Unpaid is a problem, though.
Right.
Yeah.
That becomes an expectation, I think. these places.
It gets baked
that,
in.
That is the problem.
But like my case is a great example to talk about because I chose to do that. No one was making me do it. You could say that in the background, there is always this thought in the back of your head, like you live and die by your reputation in this industry. Like you want to be seen to be doing good work quickly. Those are the two metrics. It has to be good, it has to be quick. And it was TV animation, so it has a deadline and it goes out by the deadline. So if you don't do it, someone else is going to have to do it. So there is all that hanging over. And also, like, I really enjoy animating. So I enjoy doing it. Like, I crack a beer and I, like, do an extra couple of hours on a scene just to get it looking exactly how I want it to. And so that's an example of that's me pouring my passion into it and my love for the craft and all that kind of thing. But it is uncompensated and the studio would rather.
That's the problem. I think if you were working for a good company, it would be maybe not like in overtime pay at that moment, but like a year end bonus or just like, hey, we finally got that out the door. Everyone, please take like an extra long weekend or something, like an extra long weekend or free days off.
There'd be a
company retreat, something that like,
hey guys, go talk to a union if you need to. You know,
be a sincere
no ramifications.
I mean,
that's
why a company should be paying or treating their employees well, so they don't unionize. We're not going to get into the union conversation because I bad taste in my mouth. I've been part of a union before, and it wasn't sunshine and rainbows. Mm-hmm. There is value there. I see the idea, but.
Not for everybody. It's one of those things where that grind, I just don't know if we can, like, what I like with GTA's 6 delays, can you know, that they're constant delays. I wish it was any other company than Rockstar because of their history, but I like the idea that they're saying this big game, which is worth, I mean, you see it when they call it, when they call it a delay, like stocks begin to fucking plummet and stuff. Like that's how big and important this game is, GTA 6. But I'm glad they're delaying it. I'm glad it's been delayed again until November of next year because, hey, it just means that people probably, I hope, won't be absolutely working out their arse to get this thing done. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but this is the same company that has a terrible record of making people grind, you know, do all these times. And as you said, Luke, it's the industry. It's kind of like if you don't do it, someone else will. And so you're dispensable in that sense, I think.
They delayed the game before firing the people. Do you think they like preemptively told us about the delay?
Yeah.
Because they knew they were going to be firing 40 people?
There's I've heard conversations about that.
I'm just cluing into this now. Like, did they preemptively... Holy shit.
I absolutely do think that that's why the delay came out. I think that... I obviously can't prove that, but... Like, Rockstar are approaching this whole, like, and the upcoming litigation around it, they're approaching it all very carefully, holding their cards very close to their chest, and, like, seeping out information about why they're taking the action that they're taking. I think they absolutely knew. And the people were served, the people were fired same day. They were called into HR or called into a Zoom call and be like, hey, we're letting you go, effective immediately. You can't go to your desk and collect your things. You'll be escorted off the premises. No job.
Which is wild. Yeah, a wild way to go about things. Yeah, it's funny because lots of people, that's the funny thing, that the news of GTA 6 being delayed is such big news that it kind of clouds over everything else. One of the things I want to talk about in the post show is Marvel, or was it 1943, The Rise of Hydra, the Captain America game. They announced that game was delayed the day of, or the day after GTA 6 delay was announced. And it was because of this thing where they're like, well, no one's going to care about this if... Because it's such big news that you can say things within this news item and it will just get lost because no one's interested in hearing that. They're like, oh, so yeah, there is. I think there's no smoke without fire. I think it's a possibility they knew this and announced this. I mean, I listened to a lot of kind of like industry people talking about this kind of stuff. And it's mixed. There's people who don't believe that's the case. There's people who definitely do believe that's the case. I wouldn't put it past Rockstar, to be honest, and Take Two, you know, Entertainment. I really wouldn't.
I think if it's not the case that this was, if it actually wasn't the case that this is complete and blatant union busting, I find that hard to believe given the, so I'll just go really quickly through the details of the story that I'm aware of.
Yeah, go for it.
This was the most recent clarification I heard was a couple of days ago from a journalist outlet, People Make Games, hopped on a call with Novara Media's Aaron Bastani and talked through the details of the case. And the most recent update is Rockstar have come out and specifically cited that. So they used Slack for intercompany communications, like a lot of businesses do. And there are a lot of Slack channels on there for people to talk about whatever they want, like people to talk about their hobbies and gardening and and stuff like that. And there is stuff around the union organizing in the Slack channel as well.
Oh, rookie mistake.
Rockstar shut down all Slack channels that weren't associated with work. And as a response to that, the people working at Rockstar was like, okay, well, we're going to do our union organizing on Discord instead. We're going to create a private server on Discord and we're going to do it there.
Smarter.
And that's what Rockstar have fired them for. That's the most recent update. Because the Slack channel forced them to take their stuff offline, Rockstar are treating this private Discord server like it's a potential data leak threat. And they even...
So they used... Because, I mean, that was the interesting thing, that we did have a massive GTA 6 leak in terms of the trailer leaked. We had gameplay leaked and stuff like that when it was still... Leaking doesn't harm games.
I'm still so, fucking...
That is really important. Yeah, leaking does not harm games. That is great for marketing. But also, it seems to be that Rockstar is trying to build the case that that leak is connected to this Discord server.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of... not all of the messages have been leaked, but pretty much the majority of the messages from the server have been leaked. No one showed a trailer. No one did anything.
I mean, the thing with Discord, like, even if it is a private server, and like, you can get that entire history and just like the transcript. And like, if they have nothing to like hide, I suppose, if they weren't actually leaking anything, they could just release that entire transcript.
And in theory, wasn't the leaks of the game development part of a hack? Wasn't that what the initial
thought
was? I thought they were hacked.
I'm not sure.
It's a while ago now. In fairness, it's about 2 years ago, I think, now. Yeah, but yeah, like, I mean, Ollie, what you're saying doesn't surprise me.
So that's the most recent update that I have, and my takeaway of it.
If they leaked it themselves so they could blame it on...
I think that's entirely possible as well.
Fuck.
This is some tinfoil hat shit.
My takeaway at the end of the day is that this probably is union busting. If it's not union busting...
It's definitely... Without a shadow of a doubt, there's no way this isn't union busting.
Right. But if in some scenario it isn't union busting and they were just like cracking down on like potential leaks and tightening up security, and as a result of it, the bad optics of it are that all 40 people that they fired are either in a union or trying to join the union, then that's just their...
Massive coincidence.
That's their shit coming home to roost, because Rockstar has fucked this up for decades now.
Yeah.
And this is their comeuppance. I'm delighted that it's happening to them. I feel so bad for the employees.
I want to be delighted. Rockstar's not going to suffer for this, though.
Yeah, likely not.
They're going to get away with this. People are still going to buy their game. They're going to forget that this happened because it's GTA.
And all the workers who were here on work visas, which are now invalid and they're getting deported back to where they're from, are still going to get deported, and like, they're going to have their lives.
It won't matter. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the workers get hurt. So I don't really care if it hurts. And I hope it does hurt.
I'm on your side with hoping that it hurts. Mm. But I'm pessimistic, man. I don't think the company's going to be affected.
That's what I mean. I think if this was kind of smaller studios, I think it'd make bigger news. I just think GTA 6 is such an untouchable titan, or Grand Theft Auto is such an untouchable titan of an IP. And
but
it's sad.
In fairness, as they've already stated, you know, Call of Duty's too big to fail, and it failed this time around. So maybe there is hope that people are wising up
and you're
not putting up with this bullshit.
Your impression is you think GTA 6 will be a bit of a fluff, Chris, you were saying before. You think GTA 6 will...
I think the writing's on the wall. I think it could be a flop, especially like it's still just locked at 30 frames, which is crazy. It's coming out at the end of 2026 when we have like new consoles right around the...
Yeah.
I think it might fail. I think
it'll be interesting.
It's going to be bad, or it's going to be like an even worse than Cyberpunk launch.
Oh, now that would be something. That would be something. But enough on Rockstar, gentlemen. We go now to PlayStation 5. This is and their possible cross-buy, or a possible cross-buy graphic was spotted. And this is coming from Tom Phillips at IGN. PlayStation 5 cross-buy graphics spotted, sparking hope that Sony will finally introduce dual PS5 and PC purchases. A cross-buy graphics spot on the PlayStation Store has sparked speculation that Sony is set to announce cross-platform purchasing for its games across consoles and PC. References to a cross-buy tag seen via the PlayStation Store and a PS5 console store graphic featuring the word cross-buy were recently spotted by social media user Amethyst and investigated by DLabs. Now, DLabs have verified both the PlayStation Store code and image are legitimate, confirming, if nothing else, that Sony is indeed thinking about some kind of cross-buy offering. How exactly this offering may work remains to be seen. How exact this offering may work remains to be seen, however. Would cross-buy only be available for first-party games currently released on PC? Would access be granted free for future PC launches? And what about third-party titles? Indeed, there's no formal confirmation this cross-buy feature relates to PC at all. Amid reports of a future PlayStation handheld being in development, perhaps the scheme will simply be offered for games that work across the PS5 and a new PS5 portable. One thing seems certain, however, these are relatively new images added by Sony in June 2025, according to DLabs. That rules out this latest development as relating to anything left over from Sony's last foray into cross-buy schemes back during the PlayStation Vita era. Cross-buy is, of course, offered on Xbox, where owning a game on console also allows you to play the same title without further charge on PC, or via streaming on your phone, or Ally X handheld, or wherever else you're playing that's on Xbox. By comparison, Sony has been more protective over its first-party games. Sony ported Horizon Zero Dawn over to PC in 2020, 3 years after it released on the PS4, and it sporadically launched a swathe of other first-party titles on PC since. But crucially, it has typically held off from launching its biggest blockbusters outside of PlayStation until a year after their original console launch. Microsoft gaming boss Phil Spencer has previously criticized PlayStation for its staggered PC release schedule, pointing out that the consumers are forced to wait for months or years, then pay twice for the same content. But Sony has defended the practice, with previous PlayStation boss Jim Ryan committing back in 2023 to a staggered release of first-party games on PC for the foreseeable future. I like that Phil Spencer's out there criticizing people. It's a good one. That's rich. But no, interesting. My question to both of you guys is actually staggering the release for a year on PC kind of a bit more harmful to PlayStation in terms of sales? Do we think that there's a massive group of people who are buying on PlayStation and waiting for a year to buy on PC? The only example I can think of is that I know for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, there was a lot of people dying for the PC release because of the output that playing on PC would have, like better frames, better graphics.
Provided they put in the effort to porting it correctly, absolutely, PC will always have the potential to be better than console just because you can keep it as up-to-date as the hardware that's available. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it hurts PlayStation's model, no, because PlayStation's thing is like exclusive, so they want you to buy their console, which is why there's the delay. So if you're not willing to, if you own a PC and you're not willing to buy a PS5, you can wait the extra year. That makes sense to me. Yeah, as a strategy. I get it.
It's an interesting thing that I like the idea of, because we often talked in the early days of the podcast, we were waiting for that cross-play, cross-save, cross-whatever, you know, is the future of gaming. We shouldn't have to kind of pick or choose our well, consoles
cross,
to play
cross,
against.
Cross-save is entirely different than cross.
Let's say if I have a PC.
We're talking about buying a game and then being able to play it on every medium that we choose to. This is entirely different because, sure, you buy the game on PlayStation, but now I can play it on Steam, which is an entirely different platform than like. When you buy the game, like 30% of what you pay actually goes to that platform, right? Whether it's the Microsoft Store, the PlayStation Store, or Steam. So if you buy it on PlayStation, being able to play it on Steam means Steam is not making any money off of it.
Yeah.
So I think this is a way to like cut out, like, you know, get their dues instead of it going to another company. The other thing is, I don't know how this would work. Like, is it a CD key where I can go on Steam and just like, or do I have to link my Steam account to the PlayStation account? Or maybe you just can't play it through Steam. Like, is Sony going to have its own launcher on PC?
Yeah, do we think this does involve Steam? Because it doesn't have to.
Yeah, I know. I keep saying Steam just because they pretty much monopolized PC. So I should drop that. Like, I just don't know how this is going to work.
If it is a thing that's true, supposedly the graphic is legitimate. There's nothing fake about the graphic, which does have a. I'll see if I can just bring it up here again.
Cross by, like what? How would they verify? It must be a CD key. It would have to be.
So the thing says cross by, and it's cross by in this cool little like colorful whatever else. On the side it says PS5 PC. So I'm assuming you, whatever your profile is on PC, once you load in.
Yeah, but how does
you link it
Sony
to your,
what you know. Like you'd have to have a Sony launcher or something, I think.
I'm sure you could probably link, because what I've done with certain things is that I've attached or linked, like with Arc Raiders, let's say, for example, I have linked my Arc Raiders account to my Sony account. Like, so Arc Raiders is an independent game.
Right,
I'm assuming there could
be
a similar thing where I go onto whatever my PC platform might be and I connect my PlayStation profile to that, and it recognizes that I purchased this game.
So this would involve, let's bring it up again, Steam saying, yes, yeah, now you can link your PlayStation. Oh, no, they already do that, actually, because they had to.
For Helldivers and stuff.
For Helldivers, yeah.
And I guess I know where you're coming from, saying that if you buy it on PlayStation, the PlayStation store gets the money, but maybe Steam doesn't. But I'm assuming this is it works both ways.
Steam actually doesn't care, though. Like, buying... Do you think Steam keys for it's always been ages. Like you buy the Humble bundles and stuff. Like they're not trying to squash that at all.
Like a Steam key, basically the purchase on PlayStation. You think they treat that?
I don't think Steam cares about this. This is just little fish to them because, like I said, they've monopolized it, and not because they're being greedy. It's just they've provided the most consumer friendly platform out there. They don't care about like squash and shit.
But
like
I suppose
this.
In terms of it probably works the same way. I'm sure if this is cross by, there's probably a method on your PC, whatever your storefront might be, that if you're buying it on PC, you're cross buying it for PlayStation as well. So let's say, for example, you're someone like Chris, you're a PC gamer.
That's the thing, though. I don't think it would work. Like, I think you'd have to buy it directly through PlayStation, and like you don't have the option Steam to do it. You'd have to go to the PlayStation store and opt in for the cross buy button that would give you the.
So like Steam gets nothing out of
it. Yeah, which makes it to me seem like why
but
would they bother?
But that's the thing, Steam wouldn't care.
Well, Steam wouldn't care, but what about, that's what I mean in terms of, I know we're saying Steam, but we're talking about PC, it's a PC cross.
Well, there's no piece, like PC's PC, who else would get a cut of it? Like,
well, like unless they have their own proprietary storefront on PC.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The other thing is like they could have a PlayStation launcher that they're going to, you know, just the desktop app that you can install.
I think maybe they might, because like even, you know, the next step for Xbox is to bring everything to PC and link it to Steam as close as they can, or at least like you can access Steam from your Xbox hardware. So
the crazy thing about this, though, is if they do plan on just like, you know what, we're going to have our own fucking PlayStation launcher, and that's the only way you can play PlayStation published games, it's actually going to hurt them in the long run. Companies have tried this before. If you try to circumvent Steam, like people just don't give a fuck about you anymore.
That's what's happening in my head right now. I'm like, they're either allying with Steam in some kind of compromise way, or they're taking on Steam on the PC market, which
is a stupid idea. Yeah.
Like I said, they've monopolized it without even trying. Like, they're just too consumer friendly. Like,
we'll wait and see. Early days. Before we move on, I just want to let you know about our Patreon over at patreon.com/ The Gift of Gaming. For less than a coffee a month, you can hop onto our Patreon, where we currently have over 100 post shows for you to enjoy. From video gaming battle royales to thoughts and opinion pieces on the here and now of gaming, and even extra news episodes every month, there's so much for you to enjoy, all while helping keeping the lights and mics on here at The Gift of Gaming podcast. On today's post show, we're looking at even more news from November, including the GTA 6 delay, the 1943 Rise of Hydra delay, and the Super Mario Galaxy movie. So check out patreon.com/thegiftofgaming for our growing library of video game content. And do you prefer to listen to podcasts via YouTube video? Well, then boy, you're in luck. All of our podcast episodes are now on YouTube over at youtube.com/@thegiftofgaming. Leave a like, subscribe, and if you're feeling bold, tell us what you think by dropping us a comment. Here we go, guys. I did it again.
My boy, you were fucking born for this. Keep the lights and mics on. Did you come up with that?
I don't think so, no. I think I probably heard that somewhere.
Okay, yeah. Well, fuck. Could have convinced me, man. That was...
I'll do my best.
Well done, man. Well done, buddy.
Thank you. I'll move on to the next news story. This is, we are going on to Square Enix wants to use generative AI to automate 70% of QA and debugging by late 2027. This is coming from
debugging? Ooh, I don't know about that.
This is coming from game developer.
That's an awful idea.
By Diego Aguirre. So, one of Square Enix's goals for the next few years is to use generative AI to automate 70% of QA and debugging tasks in game development, which the company aims to do by the end of 2027. The goal, spotted by VGC, was detailed in the company's progress report on its medium-term business plan, which was released alongside the financial results for the six-month period ended September 30th, 2025. Classified as, quote, promoting AI utilization in Japan, the goal is part of the company's plan to roll out initiatives to create additional foundational stability. As explained in the report, the company has initiated a joint research with the Matsuo Laboratory at the University of Tokyo, and there was a company-wide business idea contest held under the theme of AI, with, quote, several selected ideas developed into projects and currently being promoted internally. The nature of these projects is currently unknown. The aim of the joint research is to improve the efficiency of game development processes through AI technologies, the company said. Leaning on generative AI specifically, Square Enix wants to improve the efficiency of QA operations and establish a competitive advantage in game development. development. In terms of structure, the joint research team includes more than 10 members, comprising researchers from the Matsuo Iwasawa Laboratory at the University of Tokyo, as well as engineers from the Square Enix Corp, which is advancing the collaborative development. There's a second part of this article I want to go to, but first, thoughts on generative AI for QA and debugging.
Awful. Awful. QA... Oh, sorry, sorry.
How do you do Gen? How do you use Gen AI to do QA? Like what? How does that work?
I don't know. Sorry. Yeah, QA. For some reason, I thought in my mind just like support, like chat support, which I was like, oh, okay, everyone's doing that. That's probably just the only place for it. But QA specifically, like bug testing. Yeah. Nah, man. This is going to be a train wreck.
It might supplement like the QA team that they already have. Like they have a QA
supplement.
Team.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but because it's pretty common to supplement with AI now just to write tests, like behavior tests around.
But they want
a new
this.
Feature.
They want this to be 70% of their QA processes. Is that a supplement? I don't think so.
They definitely get rid of jobs.
I tried to get into the gaming industry via QA testing years ago. Did a couple of interviews with places, and I feel sad for me with no kind of background in gaming apart from, you know, any sort of like content creation or anything like that. QA was kind of my only route in, and
QA is a funny one because it can either be just like that entry level, like these guys don't know anything, or like they're literal rock stars when it comes to coding because they can automate all the shit they're testing. Just by like coding, you know, run through this whole feature just like automatically.
Which is probably where I was failing a lot. But
it depends on the company though, because like, a lot of people think just like, yeah, just have an idiot hammer away at this, or like hire actually like competent software engineers to just like.
Well, no wonder I didn't get that job.
Sorry, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, you just.
Yeah, monkeys with peanuts. No, but the only part I worry about would be the job loss, the absolute roast. But that's fair. I have no experience in it whatsoever.
But you it could have been one of those companies that happy at just having some guy just like telling somebody to like walk into this wall
and
for hours
first.
To see if you can clip through.
Yeah.
I think Chris's point. Yeah, and I'd make the point as well. It's like a lot of getting any of those jobs in any of those industries is just down to luck. Doesn't necessarily have to do with your background at all.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are too kind. You don't have to. It's okay. It's okay. I didn't get the job. It's a long time ago, guys. I'm over it. It's fine. But we'll move on with the article a little bit here so I don't get too sad. The article continues. Days ago, multiple Japanese studios, including Square, told OpenAI to stop pilfering their work. This week, the Content Overseas Distribution Association, CODA, submitted a written request to OpenAI to demand the US company to stop using its members' content to train models such as Sora 2. The Japanese anti-piracy organization represents numerous media and video game companies, including Square Enix, Psy Games, Bandai Namco, and From Software owner Kadokawa Corporation. CODA claimed OpenAI might be committing copyright infringement after it confirmed a larger number of outputs produced by video generation model Sora 2 closely resembles Japanese content or images. CODA has determined that this is the result of using Japanese content as a machine learning data. In cases, as with Sora 2, where specific copyrighted works are reproduced or similarly generated as outputs, CODA considers that the act of replication during the machine learning process may constitute copyright infringement.
I don't know how anybody doesn't understand this yet. Like, AI can only generate stuff based on actual human works of art.
So in
that
theory,
it can see. Like, everything is copyright.
Yeah, in theory, nothing that it could create is original. Well, I mean, I suppose this is where the conversation.
This is where it gets weird, because like you could say that about humans too. Like you always take reference as well. Sure, I'm not an artist. You, Luke, could probably speak on this more. But like when you draw up a new sketch, you're probably taking inspiration from something else. Like probably 99% of the time, I would say.
Sure, but there is always the no two people are gonna.
Draw the thing the
same
way.
If two people took the exact same inspiration and gave the exact same reasons for it and you sat them both down in front of an easel and got them to do an image, they won't make the same image. That's the human factor that comes into it. There's a creative spark that's very individual to everything.
So is AI potential? Like, you give them the exact same prompt twice in a row and it will come up with
two companies will come up with two different images,
Two companies will come up with two different, but that's just two different bases of, like, training, right?
Is that not with the humans as well? You have come up with two different bases of. And listen, I'm
defending AI too much. No, fuck it. Kill the robots now. God damn it.
Yeah, this is not
those damn clankers.
Beyond the
clankers.
Yeah. AI over artists isn't a great look for anyone right now.
And I'll finish off anyway this article. At the start of 2024, Square Enix president and representative director Takashi Kiru said the company would be aggressive when applying AI and other technologies throughout the year to create new forms of content for consumers. In 2025, game developers aren't warming up to generative AI, and some are more worried than ever that technology will lower the quality of games. Last month, Final Fantasy series composer Nobuo Uematsu talked to JazzRack magazine about his opinion on generative AI in music, stating that he has never used a technology and probably never will. Quote, I think it still feels more rewarding to go through the hardships of creating something myself. When you listen to music, the fun is also in discovering the background of the person who created it, right? AI does not have that kind of background, though, Uematsu told JSARC. Even when it comes to live performances, music produced by people is unstable and everyone does it in their own unique way. And what makes it sound so satisfying are precisely those fluctuations and imperfections. That's a great way to put it. I find this so interesting.
The music thing scares me because there's AI Drake albums out there, and I wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
I was listening to a kind of soul version of the Black Parade. It just came up on my YouTube algorithm, and I was like, "This is who the fuck covered this? This is amazing." I was like, "Oh, this is all fucking AI. God damn it!"
Yep.
And I don't want
anything to
do with
it. It's getting too good, man.
Yeah. I was listening there, be like, "This sounds like someone could," but it is. It was fully AI. I was like, "Fuck!" But
I'm so thankful that my mom is the type that would fall for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
She always comes to me first. It was if it's a speech from the Canadian Prime Minister telling you to sign up for something.
Yeah.
She's like, Chris, is this real? I was like, no, Mom, absolutely not. She's like, oh, it looked real. I was like, yeah. Thanks for messaging me first.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, the Prime Minister of Canada is not trying to get you to sign up for a crypto scheme. Right? it'll never happen.
We don't know, Chris. Never say never. But I find this article really interesting because in almost the same breath, Sony's or Square Enix is we're going to use AI for improving all our game stuff. By the way, AI, stop stealing all our stuff. I'm
It's fucking weird. It's so weird. I don't...
Surely they can see the dark side of it in the fact that taking this legal case for copyright infringement, but at the exact same time saying we're going to use all this to prop up or help build the company and gain a development advantage. And I'm like, it's to me, it's a weird, it's like two different people speaking on these things, it feels like.
See, the problem right now is they're trying to use AI, it's just greedy corporate bullshit. They're trying to use AI to cut costs on replacing the human jobs that they already have, where they should be using AI to kind of add new features or shit to their game that they're not paying anyone to do. Like a perfect example is, remember you had a dream of NPC dialogue being AI generated because they're not paying anybody to write a ton of new dynamic dialogue, right? Mm-hmm. You have the NPCs that always say, oh, I was an adventurer like you till I took an arrow. And they should be using AI to generate shit like that on the fly in a game. Instead of, trying to replace
people. Because I think there's people who can write the general story or narrative of things that these NPCs can say. But that when we play games and you click X to interact with the same person.
You can only go so far. You're not going to have an entire staff you just do random NPC dialogue that isn't important to anything.
Yeah.
You're not going to pay somebody to do that. So just get AI to do that. Fucking.
And to improve our experiences. Yeah. But it's such a fucking murky waters.
Yeah.
Area.
Yeah, it's easy to walk over and stamp on a bunch of people's rights. There was have you guys seen that AI bot applied to Skyrim where you can walk through it and have full conversations with every NPC?
Oh, I think you might have linked us to something like that before.
Maybe,
I think I saw it.
Okay, so that sounds like what I just described.
Yeah,
is this a thing?
Yeah, it is. It's a mod though. It's a community.
Of course it's a mod. Everything to do with Skyrim is a mod now.
There's no original game left.
The community built that game.
Yeah, it's fun as hell. There's a VR creator that I follow who used to do a lot of Skyrim, and she just go around having conversations.
Cool as fuck. See, I can kind of get on board with that. Another one too, bit of a hot topic right now, but Embark with Arc Raiders and even the finals, they've been playing around with AI voice lines, and they get the actors, right, to do the actual voice lines, but they use AI to dynamically string them together, and you kind of pick it up in the game because it'll sound funny. There's weird pitches when they're just like, if you ping two things, it'd be like silencer and gun here. It won't be like silencer, gun. It'd be like silencer and gun. Like they use AI to like string it together. I think there's value there. I think we can improve on that just for more dynamic experiences in the game. But
the weird one about that one is that
they're taking a lot of shit just because the moment you say AI, well, everyone's just like, nah.
For Arc Raiders, there's those five or six traders that you go back and talk to and they give you quests or whatever else. They got people to read the lines for those and then to sign off on that they could use their voice to kind of extrapolate on, you know, the voice ever more after that, even in terms of when they're improving on the game. To me, I'd love to see the contract that was signed. I'd love to see what money were these people given to essentially hand off the right for them to ever be called back to do more work for this. Were they given a lot of money to say, yeah, no, you can use our voice forever more, and here's a big, you know, we just want a big chunk of money that will equate us if we were working on this for 2 years.
It's not using their voice forevermore, it's using the voice lines they recorded forevermore.
Yeah,
I think with AI,
they've managed to take, like, it's like that with AI. They've taken that voice. It's like I could listen to a whole book read by David Attenborough. It's not read by David Attenborough. They've just taken what they
heard. That's the thing. I don't think that was in the contract. Like, that was probably stipulated in the contract. You can't just create new dynamic, like, twist their words and, like, make them say something that they never recorded. I think it's just taking the voice lines that they recorded and kind of like manipulating that.
But have they set that up in such a way that the voice lines they recorded would give them the endless library they need to put in whatever thing going forward?
I don't think they actually sat them down and made them read the dictionary. No.
Like, no, but I don't think you need to. That's the thing. That's the problem that I have with this generative AI stuff is that I don't think you need to sit someone down and, hey, you have to read the fucking encyclopedia for this thing to be able to get your voice.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if they never said the word, you know, encyclopedia, like, they can't generate, put that in the
game.
That's
just a word made up of phonemes. You just have to cover enough phonemes.
Yeah.
In each, there's only a limited.
That's what I'm worried about. That they got them to sit down to say, like, and I'd say it's probably out there. It exists from a guidebook perspective to say, if you want to be able to get this voice to speak every word in the English language, here's every word you need to say, so that the thing can pick up on, as Luke said, the phonemes to develop every word going forward.
Same way, like when you're doing your keyboard test, you do the quick brown fox jumps over the, I don't remember what it is, but that's, it uses every letter on the keyboard, which is the idea. You just need to do the equivalent but cover all the phonemes that are used, because there's a very limited number of phonemes in the English language.
To see the contract,
exactly. But
I'd be interested. That'd be such a fucking awesome move if they actually like show the contract. This is the contract we make our VAs sign.
Yeah,
just show us
and like
nothing to hide, just like, okay.
Yeah, but I think if they're not showing, it's probably because they have something to hide. Yeah, so it's like, no, but we paid them like this great, as if they were working for us for 2 years, because that's what
expected. Obviously don't show them money, but like show them the rules and stipulations. Yeah,
and then you kind of make your own price. I still don't feel great about it. We are kind of running short on time, so I'm going to go through, we want to talk about Valve stuff, of course, because you have kind of updated opinions on
Valve. You guys already talked about Valve, but you know, I'm happy to.
We discussed an Xbox thing about how fucked Microsoft would be, but we haven't really gone into the hardware too much. But there's one on, you know what, we did say we talked about Sony, but I'll swing back around to the Sony failing on live service, which we're not surprised at, if we have time. But we'll go on to
news anymore.
Yeah. We'll go to Valve. This is coming from Austin, Manchester at Polygon. Valve reveals new Steam Machine, its next attempt at PC console hybrid. Valve revealed its next batch of at-home hardware on Wednesday, including a new take on the Steam Machine, a gaming PC that's intended to be used like a console. Also revealed were the Steam Frame, which is Valve's next VR headset, and a new Steam controller, all of which are planned to ship in early 2026. Valve said in a news release that it will share more specific timing after the first of the year. Valve has not yet revealed the prices for Steam Machine, Steam Frame, or the new Steam controller, but all are available to wishlist via Steam. All three products will ship to the United States, Canada, the UK, the EU, and Australia. Distribution for Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Taiwan will be handled by Komodo, which also currently distributes the Steam Deck. The Steam Machine. The cube-shaped Steam Machine will come with Steam OS, is optimized for playing games, and is designed to sit by your TV like a game console or on your desk like a gaming PC. Because it's a PC, you can install other apps and programs or a different operating system. And like the Steam Deck, all you have to do is sign in to your Steam account to access all the games in your Steam library.
Have you seen the Steam Machine like taken apart?
Yes.
God, it's fucking optimized, man. It's just like the back is just an entire fan that blows like fucking cooling. That's awesome. Right through it. Oh my God. It it's a marvel. Like Steam has always, or sorry, Valve has always been really good at hardware, and that's kind of why their hardware has cost a bit of a premium, because they put a lot of fucking effort into these the designs.
Well, let's see what's in the Steam machine. The Steam machine will come with a semi-custom AMD Zen 4 C6 12T. I don't know what that means. A semi-custom.
Nobody does.
A semi. You know what? This is. Yeah, we don't need to go through this. But basically, the Steam machine contains six times the horsepower of its handheld device, the Steam Deck.
What's this is the big fucking worry right now. Is what is the RAM in it? Because
this is saying. Ooh, does it actually mention?
32 gigs, surely.
32 gigs would be.
Oh, it's so it's saying AMD and 16 gigabyte 16 would DD.
If it's streamlined to just play a game, like the reason you'd need 32 in a computer these days is because you also have like Chrome running and shit like that.
Sure,
like
yeah, it's, yeah. And you're handling all the.
Yeah, this is like Steam OS, like when you're in big picture mode. When you're playing a game, it shuts down like all the other processes. You're like, here, play the fucking game.
We go on to like how games can earn a green Steam Deck verification checkmark. Valve will also introduce similar ratings for the Steam machine to indicate how games run on
it. It's just the exact. It's just a checkmark for Steam OS. It's not a. It's actually a checkmark for Linux specifically.
Going on to the Steam frame, the headset is intended to stream all of your Steam games, not just VR specific titles. It's described as comfortable, wireless, lightweight, and supports controller input for regular PC games and VR games. Valve describes it as a streaming first and a PC itself powered by a Snapdragon processor. Like the Steam machine, games will also receive verification ratings to indicate which games will work standalone on it. Head to the Steam frame page for its full spec details, as well as those of its controller. Speaking of which, Valve's new Steam controller is the final piece of hardware unveiled. Steam Deck owners will notice the trackpads on either side of the controller, just like those in the Steam Deck. They're great for games that are usually best played with a mouse and keyboard, like first-person shooters or real-time strategy games. that'd be awful.
Civ with those would be all right, but yes. Like I wouldn't be fucking playing a first-person shooter with trackpads. That's
no,
mental.
God, I just give me the.
And I'm also trying to think, like, what are the other games that are, like I like playing on, like. I'll play a fighting game on a controller, but like I wouldn't use a trackpad.
God, no.
That'd be psychotic.
That'd be awful. With the trackpads and grip buttons on the back, the Steam controller will be highly customizable. Thanks to its input parity with Steam Deck, Steam controller will be pre-populated with community configurations for thousands of games from day one, or you can make and share your own.
Well, that just exists on Steam right now.
It's just so you can add it to the controller as well.
Because you can set up controller profiles, like, and Steam already knows, like, oh, this is a PlayStation controller, and they have their default settings, but you can also click on, like, you know, the Dazzler's, you know, perfect controller profile for Horizon Zero Dawn, and it's just like it'll remap all your buttons to like this is how Darren plays the game. He thinks
I like that you think that my name on Steam would be Dazzler. Maybe I should rename it to that. Dazzlers. Chris, I'm assuming, and I'll talk about my opinions of this, I'm assuming this isn't a product for you, the Steam Machine.
Oh no. I already have a pretty good PC. So I don't think I would get this. I also have like an NVIDIA Shield where I can just stream to my
living room TV.
Yeah. I do see value. Like, I mean, depends on the price point. Like, if I could get my girlfriend into fucking games and like sit her down on the couch and there while I'm in the office, play something together, that'd be pretty dope.
Lucas, it's something that would be, if you had the money, let's say, is the Steam Machine something that appeals to you in any way as a product?
Yeah, I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a good PC at the moment.
Yeah, well that's the other thing too, is it's perfect for that. It's perfect for that. Especially if you only want a PC to play games. Like why? I've been saying this for ages, like cuz our buddy Kev recently got the laptop. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to me about like what should I get like to play games. I was like, my first question is like, are you just trying to play games? Because get a Steam Deck. No reason to get a laptop. And he's like, no, I want the functionality. Like, I also want a laptop.
It was
like,
a bit
okay,
of a home
so
office,
that's
yeah.
a different. So now we're having a different conversation. But yeah, if you're looking for something to just play games to get in the PC market, this would be, depending on the price, this would be a great shout.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have a laptop
for work. I got a phone for other stuff that I need. Like, I can do my docs and everything on my phone. I don't mind doing that. get a PC just for your gaming Steam machine.
Yeah, man. I as you would have known, I was never a person who would have been too pushed for PC gaming. One of the things that's let me down over the years is that I own a Mac. So, for example, there's lots of games on Steam which are Windows only, and I can't play them. Lots of them would be games that, like Age of Empires, etc.
So this is interesting because we're talking about Windows only, but like these are Linux-based machines, and I feel like if it plays on Linux, it should be able to play on Mac because it's both Unix-based operating systems, right? Like, is it just Mac that makes things difficult?
Yep. Yeah. Big time. That's an Apple. That's an Apple. Because
I know Xcode or whatever, XStudio or whatever the fuck it is. I know that's a bit of a nightmare for developers, but
You have to, as a developer, you have to buy a license to release it on Mac, and it's a yearly license that you have to pay to have it in the Apple framework.
So you couldn't just build something in Unity, wrap it in like an HTML5. Yeah. No.
They won't. Well, like, yeah, sure. You could, yeah, you could play on a web browser. But like.
Well, I mean, remember CrossCode? Like, that's HTML5. Like, that's.
Yeah, sure. You could. I'd say you'd have stuff like that, but again, like, you're playing that with a browser.
Yeah, you're definitely not playing your Arc Raiders and shit like that.
Yeah,
exactly. You need to, Apple do make it difficult. Another thing on top of this, like another selling point of these systems, it's the same reason where, like, why I didn't have much qualms buying a Steam Deck and why I love my Steam Deck is because I've been buying games on Steam for like over 10 years.
Yeah.
I have like over 200 titles.
I'm three games shy of 300.
Are you? Somewhere between
this
two.
This is where I think where I want this to get into the gaming world, but my Steam library consists of about 8 games, I think, because I've never been into that infrastructure.
That changes, yeah. Like, if you were to get...
If you open the floodgates.
Yeah. Lauren comes home and she's like, hey, happy birthday. Here's a gaming laptop. And you, like, go on the storefront right now. Like, they're having the Black Friday sale. I guarantee you fill up.
You'd be like,
I guarantee you'd be shocked.
Is €6 right now? Yeah, I think Hogwarts Legacy is €8 right now.
That's outrageous.
It's crazy. Like,
What price does this have to be for you to buy it? Like, what is the most you will pay for a Steam machine?
I was saying initially, and I promised people that it would be around. I don't know if I promised people. I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast. Well,
you make a lot of promises to me.
I told you it would be around 800. I can't see it being more than that. Mm-hmm. But my opinion on this has changed drastically because I didn't realize we are in a bit of a RAM dilemma right now because of AI,
which is why you asked about the RAM earlier.
RAM is crazy expensive. Like, it's cheaper to buy a pre-built PC right now than to buy like 32 64 gigs of RAM or 64. 32 is probably about €400.
So buying the additional RAM for your PC is mad money currently.
Crazy.
Because EI is kind of just soaking up all that.
Just RAM in general. Like, it's going to affect cons. Apparently, it's not affecting PlayStation because apparently they've accounted for this and they have a big backstock. But it's definitely going to affect PS6. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's going to affect every console coming out. But Xbox rose the prices on the Xbox again.
Yeah.
Because RAM is crazy expensive right
so
now.
So when you say you think 800, but now your mind's been changed with RAM, does that mean that you think it's more expensive?
I'm looking up to about 1,100, 1,200 now.
Back. Yep. Do you know what? It's the thing that I heard, it was an interview, I can't remember by who, but it seemed to be, it's not an interview, but it was someone who said that they sat in, they were able to ask questions to the Valve team about the Steam machine.
Oh, are you talking about LTT?
I'm not quite sure what that is.
Linus Tech Tips?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and I think the question that he asked was with...
The room went quiet. And like, yes. That guy's just fucking traumatic. I hate that guy.
But they've confirmed, like with consoles, they'll... Like PlayStation will subsidize essentially the sale of any PlayStation. And Microsoft will subsidize the sale of any Xbox, because if you were to sell them at the true cost of the console, you're kind of pricing people out of buying them. What I find interesting is Valve has taken a decision, considering how wealthy Valve is, to not subsidize the cost of this console which to me
Valve
I kind of thought
do
was
loss leaders.
Yeah. Which given its kind of community first driven ideals, and the fact that it has got, like, I mean, we talked about how much each employee of Steam would make based on the returns. Yeah. To me, it surprised me that they wouldn't be willing to do that, because I think it would be a no-brainer for people to go in and buy a Steam machine if it was made affordable. And all of a sudden, you've got people like me in on the infrastructure.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of, it's keeping in line with the Valve philosophy going back decades. Like, you get what you get. You pay for what it costs. There's no funny business going on. It just is what it is.
Yeah, Valve, like, is the word I'm looking for pragmatic? Like, a realistic approach to, like, this is just what it is. This is the cost. This is what it cost us.
They're not trying to do business voodoo on their potential markets. They're like, hey, we do a thing.
They're not trying to rope you in. This is another thing, too, because people come after them all the time for what I brought up earlier, is like they essentially have a monopoly on PC gaming, but nobody can approach them or like sue them on this, is because their business practices, it's just so consumer like neutral, but consumer friendly, that like consumers just go to them because it's better. They're not trying to monopolize it.
They're not crushing competitors. They're not doing anything like that.
That's another thing too. If they try to make this a loss leader, it probably does open them up to a lawsuit for monopolizing PC gaming.
Yeah, sure. Maybe. Yeah.
Do you reckon though? Because that's standard practice for consoles.
But it's just...
Consoles have always had competition though. There's always been a console war. There's never been a PC war because it's just been Steam.
Just kind of trucking along. But if they're seen to be... Yeah, it's not... A lot of these lawsuits aren't based on, like, there's not a basis for them, but it gives people an excuse to...
Yeah.
Like the Xbox anti-competition lawsuit over buying Activision, it was like, there was never actually a basis there for it, but it gave Sony the excuse to, like, go after
them. Absolutely,
And it would be the same for Valve if they were to...
Epic would be the first person to come after them. Epic hates...
Yeah, well, Epic tried to step into that world and just didn't really have the impact.
Did you see the new tweets? Because Steam... has made like, Steam labels all their games like this has AI generated content, like disclaimers, like you have to like confess that you're using AI in your games in order to get it on the platform. Steam. Yeah, and the CEO of Epic is like, this is a terrible idea. This is just going to hurt consumers in the long run. He's like,
how?
Make it make sense. Please explain yourself right now. Just anything he can. Argue against Steam, he'll try. It's just so fucking weird.
So what's the price cutoff point for you, Luke?
I think it's probably 800. I don't think if it's a grand, there's no scenario where I can like finagle the numbers.
You think it's going to be 800?
I know this is the cost what you'd that pay. It would have to be.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. 800.
Above 800. I don't think I can make it. I just don't think there's any reality where I can make that work, no matter how badly I want it.
And to me, anything over 800 is too much money for me to get into the PC.
Well,
let's
wait to see.
As far as PC goes,
I mean, that's great. Let's wait to see how powerful it is first. Yeah. Because if it does dwarf like your PS5 or something,
it won't. So they've come out and said, I think the Digital Foundry came out and said that it is equatable to just being below the power of a PS5. And not even a PS5 Pro, PS5.
But so, it comes out and like now you can play like modded Final Fantasy 7 for just like 1,000. Those options open up to you.
If I hadn't have spent 800 quid buying a PlayStation 5 Pro, that would be a consideration I would make. But based on the fact that I paid 800 for a PS5 Pro, I won't pay above that for a console now with this. Because I mean, to me, it'll be a console, but a console for me to play PC gaming. 800 in this generation currently is the max I'd pay for a console based on my PS5 Pro purchase. I won't go above that for this generation. Yeah. Next generation, we'll see. We'll see what kind of stuff comes out, but this is
I also want to see how modular it is, because if you pay like a grand for it now, like I'd like to see if a RAM drops in a year or two, how easy it is to slot in some new RAM. Like I'd want to know that.
I'm such a sucker though. I saw the front customizable
the plate,
and I was like, shit, man, I'll buy it just for that.
They got me.
And SteamOS has startup movies. Customizable startup movies.
Give me a Kingdom Hearts plate and I'm all over that shit.
Yeah, you do Kingdom Hearts startup movie too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, what was the buy-in for the Stadia?
I paid, good question. I think I paid for the Founders Edition of the Stadia. I think I paid... 300 and something at the time.
Oh, that's nothing. Okay. All right.
Well, like, all
never mind. I'll never make a comparison to Stadia again.
It was just because all I got with that was a Chromecast Ultra and a controller. And then everything else was the cloud.
Which the Chromecast Ultra, I think, cost like 70 quid or something at the time, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you got that. And then I got, I think with that, I got like a year's subscription for whatever games they had available, yeah. which their library was. And for the entirety of its existence, their library was shite.
Serious
it was awful.
Sam 3.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 15.
Cyberpunk.
Final Fantasy 15, 4 or 5 years later. Yeah. So that was I first played Cyberpunk on Stadia. Yeah, and then, but it was all right. But then it didn't cost me anything because it was part of their library. But then Stadia crashed, and I was like, well, better get it on PlayStation then. And that was when it was really bad. I was like, fuck, man. But no, Stadia was about 300 quid. I love the controller, man. The controller was worth
controller's
it.
Great.
Yeah,
controller's great. I can't wait. See, I want to see you getting a PC so you can use that controller.
I know the reason why I'd be into the Steam machine is like, oh man, finally a machine for my Stadia controller. You know.
The crazy thing is you could do the comparison. Like, I've done it. I've had all four controllers in front of me. It's like, which one do I actually like?
And I think the Stadia controller feels quite nice, in fairness to it. I think it's an interesting controller. I wonder if they're worth anything. I wonder if they become a part of, like, video game memorabilia with Stadia being such a...
Yeah, maybe if cloud gaming goes on to take off in earnest, then yeah.
Yeah, the early days, part of its history.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, that's enough for us from today. We're going to hop on to do a quick post show on some more news episodes, including GTA 6 being delayed again and the Super Mario Galaxy movie. Just some short articles. It won't be too long. But if you're interested in that, check out patreon.com/thegiftofgaming. Chris, thank you so much for hopping on board. And Luke, thank you so much for hopping on board.
Sadate.
And for your great insights, as always.
You guys need to watch Booty Tank.
And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.